Good afternoon. This is the August 19th, 2025 special meeting of the Finance Committee. Director Bill Gere is here. I am here. John Merchant. First item is the call to order, which we have just completed. And second item is comment from the public. If you want to do it now, Richard, or we can, nothing at the moment?
Yes.
So we'll make time here as we get through this to pick up public comments. And item three, information item, which means there'll be no action taken. A presentation from Richardson and Company on FY fiscal year 2021-22, CSD and CFD 2014-01 audits. Cecilia, how do you want to proceed here? You guys just want to start and do your review, or do you have any? Is that how you want to work it?
Yeah, usually it's the auditor jumps in.
Okay.
Okay. So I believe in your packet, as well as up on the screen, is the one-page outline that's going to touch on the highlights of our presentation today. The first item just lists the reports that should be included in your packet. I believe that Amelia prepared some printed copies as well that might be easier for you to follow as well. So the items in your packet include the auditor's opinion on the financial statements and the financial statements themselves for both the district and the CFD. Included in that packet is a report on internal control and compliance as a result of our audit being done in accordance with government auditing standards. And then there's two separate letters. One of them contains certain required communications, and then the other one is a management letter with recommendations. So I'm going to touch on the highlights of those reports. Wanted to mention too, if we're on a page that you have questions on, please feel free to stop me. It's probably easier to address something, or if you have a question about anything that I've gone over and need clarification, you know, definitely stop me and we can address those.
Okay.
So starting with the audited financial statements.
This page?
Did you want to?
Ready?
Yeah, if you wanted to go ahead and page one.
Past
table of contents. So this is the independent auditor's report on the financial statements. The opinion is considered a modified opinion on the water and the sewer funds because of the missing infrastructure assets, the developer donated infrastructure, which we'll talk about when we go over the findings. But because those amounts can't be quantified and are not recorded, we issued what's referred to as a modified opinion on those funds. And then we issued an unmodified opinion on the drainage, solid waste, and security funds, since those funds are not affected by the developer infrastructure. The highlights of the financial statements, well, we'll start then with the first item, the management discussion and analysis. This was a kind of a discussion point, or we were asking for
next page.
Yeah. Well, actually, there's no management discussion analysis in there, but so currently there isn't a document in here that is management's discussion and analysis. And Cecilia and I had emails back and forth about whether or not the board would like to have that prepared. It is a document that describes some of the changes between last fiscal year and the current fiscal year. It is required to be provided, but it's not. If it's not provided, we would just mention in our audit report that it was not provided.
Okay.
So, which it's you know, it's a matter of just prerogative on what you would like to do on that. But
do you want to stop there and
if you want to have a discussion, we can discuss that now.
Yeah,
if you have a preference one way or another.
Well, the being that we're actually referring back to 1920. We reviewed it this morning, and I don't think it really adds. You know, and certainly if you think that, you know, that's a a difference of opinion from what you see and what we see, then we can go further with it. But I don't think really it does anything for us.
Right. Yeah, my experience with agencies that are just trying to get caught up with their audits is that typically the management discussion analysis is not provided, because you're right, those years are already passed, and to analyze changes isn't really meaningful at this point. So I would concur with
Right, and certainly when we get, and there's going to be some other things we can talk about as we progress through these next two audits, when we get to the end of that, I think it might be, you know, much more appropriate to put that comparison in based on the fact that we've now reduced it from 3 years to 1 year. So,
right.
Yeah. And Bill, do you concur with that? Or?
Yeah.
So, for the time being, yeah, let's move on, and we'll go on to the next item.
All right. So the page numbering, you'll notice a gap in there. We were just holding those pages out for the management discussion analysis, but in the final version, we'll fix the page numbering on there. So the statement of net position is on, it'll be page 11. Actually, it's page 11 and 12. We did change these pages to be landscaped so that all of the funds show up on one page.
And I've updated.
That was helpful.
I've updated this packet and the board packet online, so the information is exactly the same. I've just changed out those pages.
Right. Okay.
So we're all seeing what you've got.
Okay. So we'll turn to page 12. I'm going to focus just on the net position section of the balance sheet, which is basically, if you look at it in the form of the reserves, the net investment in capital assets is the amount of your equity that's it's tied up in your infrastructure. It's not spendable. So that's on a separate line item. Then there's the amounts that are restricted for capital projects, which would be developer fees, portion of the customer billings that are for capital purposes. So in total for all the funds, you have 8.7 million of those resources that are earmarked for capital projects. And then what's left is the unrestricted net position. And in total, it's a negative 980,000. Most of that deficit is occurring in the water and the sewer funds. You'll see the water fund has a deficit of 751,000, sewer 283, and then actually solid waste is contributing to that too at 292,000. One of the reasons for that being a deficit is if you go further up about the middle of that page, you'll see the net pension liability and the net OPEB liability. OPEB is the retiree health care benefits. So you'll see those liabilities, pension being $2.2 million and OPEB being $1.2 million. So those liabilities are calculated by actuaries, and those are projecting out, not just for your current retirees, but for your current employees, how much of a liability or how much would you need today to pay those benefits out in the future.
Right.
So it's not a liability that's currently due, but we do see this with a lot of agencies that it is causing that unrestricted net position to be a negative.
Yeah.
So that's what the situation is here. Then the statement of revenues and expenses on pages 13 and 14.
Which is 13?
Yeah, actually we'll go to page 14. So we'll look at the change in net position line, which is basically the amount by which your revenues exceed your expenses. If it's negative, then your expenses were higher than your revenues. So for the water fund, it's showing a negative or net loss of 261,000. However, that does include the 896,000 of capital related funding. So that would be fees, the capital replacement fees that are included in your customer billings. It includes fees collected from developers. So that's not money that's available for operation. So if you back that out and then look at actually page 13, at the bottom, it's showing a negative $1,157,000. So if you're looking at just purely from an operating standpoint, it's at a net loss for the year of $1.157 million. And the same is true for the sewer fund. It also has capital revenues that are, in a way, skewing the bottom line. So it has a deficit before capital contributions of $545,000. The solid waste fund is also in a has a net loss for the year of $363,000. The drainage and the sewer funds, those both had a net income for the year. Keep in mind, too, one of the items that is driving these deficits is the depreciation on your assets. So those for the water fund, sorry to keep bouncing back and forth, but if you go up to page 13, actually on page 13, you see the line item that says depreciation. So for the water fund, you have $878,000 of depreciation. So that's contributing a significant amount to your deficit,
right.
And it's not a cash transaction.
Right.
Same with the sewer fund, it has a sizable amount of depreciation. CFD, if you turn to page 19, so this is the CFD, and it's accounted for as a custodial fund of the district, but then there's also a separate set of financial statements for the CFD. This presentation that's included within the CSD's financial statements doesn't include the long-term debt. So without the debt, this fund has a positive net position of $1 million, but there's about $5 million of bonds that are outstanding in
right.
that fund.
Right.
So that drives the net position to be negative. So I wasn't planning on looking specifically at the CFD financials, but when you do look at that, you'll see that there's two different sets of columns, one before the debt and one after the debt.
Okay.
Then page 29, note 3 that's at the top of the page. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so note 3 talks about interfund transactions, and this first paragraph in note 3 describes the loan that the sewer fund made to the water fund back in 2014. It was a $1.5 million loan between the funds to cover the water treatment plant expansion. Regular principal interest payments are being made on that loan, and so the balance is down to about $500,000 as of June 22. And the interest rate that's being charged is based on the local agency investment fund interest. Then if we turn to page 31, actually we'll go to page 32, the table, yeah.
Before you go there, on 29, that interfund borrow that we have between the two restricted funds, just to be clear, that's not the whole borrowed amount. We've been tracking this since 2014, when we essentially, rather than issue a bond, went out and borrowed the money against ourselves, taking money, putting money into water and you know, from excess reserves at the time, or advanced reserves from sewer primarily, mm-hmm. and a little bit, I think, even from security. So when you look at the total of that debt and the retirement of that debt, you're up somewhere around $4.4 million. But this is correct. I mean, this is from the individual funds. We already had money. I think we already had money in the water account that had been put in there for reserves for a water plant that we did not build when we replaced it with the upgraded model that we wound up sitting out with today. So, but that's just to be clear that, you know, it wasn't just $1.5 million we borrowed. We borrowed somewhere in the neighborhood of $4.4 million, and we borrowed it all from ourselves. And at a rate of $6 a month per ratepayer, we've been retiring that since 2014. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, down page 31.
Let's go to the top of page 32 that has the table. So this table at the top shows a breakdown of the restricted net position that we saw when we were looking at the balance sheet. So this just breaks out the restricted amount into the various funds. And so these are tracked in your general ledger, and I believe reviewed during the budget process too. You have the capital replacements. You'll see the amounts there are $2.3 million for water, $3.5 million for sewer. The water augmentation fees of the cumulative amount collected of $2 million, and then capital improvements for various projects, and then security projects. Some of these are fees that are a portion of the customer's fees that go toward these particular reserves, and some of them are reserves or payments from developers when a developer makes a connection,
right.
and there's fees that are restricted. So the source of these restricted monies are from those two sources. Then the next footnote to discuss is the pension plan. It starts on page 32. We'll turn to page 33. So it talks about toward the bottom of the page there, that talks about the total pension liability of $2.2 million. So the district is part of a pooled plan within CalPERS for all employers that are less than 100 employees. So the percentage you're seeing at the bottom of that page represent the proportionate share that the district has of the total pooled plan. So there was a slight increase in the district's proportion, not necessarily anything you did, but it's just proportioned compared to what all the other agencies in the plan are doing. And I won't go over the rest of these in any detail other than if we can turn to page 36. And I like to point this page out because the pension plan or the pension liability can vary quite a bit from year to year. A lot of it's out of the district's control because the CalPERS actuaries set the discount rates that are used to value that liability. At this point in time, that discount rate that they used was 7.15%. This table shows if they raise it or lower that discount rate by 1%, you can see it has a dramatic change effect on your liability. So right now you're at that middle amount of $2.2 million. If CalPERS were to lower the discount rate by 1%, your liability would go up to $4.3 million. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, CalPERS is when they have been lowering the discount rate, so you'll see when we catch up with these audits that they have lowered the discount rate down to 6.9%. But they don't do 1% all in 1 year. They're doing it gradually over time. So you're not seeing as much of the impact of that, but did want to point out that just that one interest rate can have a significant effect on your balance sheet.
Right.
Then I did want to mention that, so the $2 million that you have recorded, if you compare that amount to last year, there was a decrease of about $1.7 million. And that, you're going to see the opposite swing in 2023. What happened in 2022 is that the investments in the CalPERS plan as of 21, which is used to value these liability, apparently that was a June 30th of 2021 must have been a good year for the or date for the market. So the plan assets had huge investment gains. Well, that drove the liability down. But then in 23, when we do the 23 audit, you'll see that liability going back up again, probably pretty close to the $4 million. because there were investment losses the following year.
Right.
So we, with all the agencies that we've been auditing, we see, you know, we saw a large decrease in 22 and then a large increase back up in 23, but then after that it's been stabilizing.
Is that pegged to that specific date every year?
Yeah.
It's pegged to June, just that
30th.
One date, June 30th?
And it's June 30th the year before, so
okay.
22 is based on June 30, 21.
Yeah.
Investment values. And so, whatever reason, I don't remember what happened around that time, but the market was really good as far as investments. And so this drove the liability down. But
right.
Like I said, there were investment losses the following year that drove the liability back up again. So to see the liability at the $2 million, that is really low. You are going to see that go back up again.
Okay.
Probably about the $3 to $4 million range. Then the OPEB is the employee health or the retiree health benefits. And if we turn to page 38. So this liability is calculated by an actuary that the district hires as opposed to the pension, which is based on the CalPERS actuaries. And so this valuation date that your actuaries used was June 30, 21, which was used to value your liability at June 30, 22. And you'll see in this table, it shows the activity in the plan. It decreased about 740,000. Most of that is just changes in actuarial assumptions. It's showing a line item for contributions, but if you'll notice, that amount's the same as the benefit payments. So in fiscal year 21-22, there were no contributions made to the trust. The only amount showing up here is contributions, which really just go in and back out again, is the retiree health care benefits. So the premiums that were paid for retirees is what that $275,000 represents.
Okay.
So in past years, there have been contributions made toward this plan. There are assets built up. You'll see in that second column of almost $2.7 million. So that helps offset a good portion of the liability, the total liability of $3.9 million. Then if we turn to the report on internal control and compliance on page 45. So in this report on page 45, we mentioned that there's areas that we've identified as material weaknesses, and then we have some items that are identified as significant deficiencies. And these are mostly items that have carried over from the previous audits that we've done. This is the third audit that we've done of the district. So the findings are over on page, starting on page 47. So on page 47, this finding is one that we added new for this 22 audit, and it has to do with the timeliness, or maybe the lack of timeliness, of the record keeping and accounting. So what we noticed is that the payroll transactions, as an example, had not been recorded in the general ledger throughout the year. There was just one entry, one large entry that was done at the end of the year. And then bank reconciliations, again, were not being performed. We're talking about, you know, back in 21-22. Bank reconciliations weren't being performed. There's no way they could be performed because not all the activity was reflected in the general ledger. So this was part of the catch-up that Cecilia had to do, and, you know, as far as getting the bank reconciliations caught up for, you know, 3-4 years ago. You know, I think that, I mean, we all know the benefit of keeping timely information to know real time what your cash balances are and what your financial condition looks like. So that's our recommendation going forward. And wanted to point out, too, on several of these, we do have received the district's responses. We just didn't have a chance to put those in here.
Right. Let me ask you, because we have, with the completion of this audit, we have the two audits that essentially we're trying to conquer in parallel with each other. And what we've been working on is, and bank reconciliations is a primary example, is as a result of what we've been able to find in the audits, we have done a significant amount of work in either implementing a procedure that didn't exist or changing a procedure that did exist that was wrong. And you know, what I'm hoping we can do in the third of these audits, in the last of the two audits that we're going to do now in parallel, is to do what we can to respond to you with the amount of things or what the things are that we have corrected through these audits, or be able to illustrate in that third audit that you're not seeing it anymore because we have fixed it. You won't be able to do that entirely because what's done is done, and,
exactly.
And we're going to have to deal with it. The goal being in that audit, or certainly in the subsequent audit, that you know, even if we continue to get, you know, a negative statement in these upcoming audits, that by that one we wind up clean. I mean, you know, this is, at this point in time, this is out of our control anyway. We're just trying to fix
it. Right.
So the objective here is to, when we get to that final audit, is to come out of it clean with a clean set of numbers, and then, you know, a monthly, you know, profit and loss or income statement that's current and accurate. So as we go through this, anything that you see that will help us get that, we would appreciate you telling us.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, but we understand it'll be some time till these items that are mentioned in here will be resolved.
Right.
Nice.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we continue to keep them in our report until we're satisfied that they have been adequately addressed.
Right. Okay.
So,
that's fair enough.
Then, starting on page 48 are the prior year findings that have carried over from the original audit that we did back in 2020. I don't know how much detail you want me to go into. I'm just going to touch on them, and then if you want further discussion, you can let me know. Finding 2021-1, this has to do with the year-end closing procedures, the fact that audits have been delayed because of mostly staff turnover and being able to get the books closed. So we're recommending account reconciliations be done during the year. But again, since we're already in, you know, what, August of 25, and we have another fiscal year, you know, the third fiscal year after this, you know, that's probably something that won't actually be resolved until 25-26 in reality, once you're caught up and working in real time. So that is finding that will carry forward. Finding 2021-2 is related to the developer constructed infrastructure that I mentioned is the reason for qualifying our opinion. We had the meeting that we had by Zoom, we kind of touched on on that issue, that it sounds like you have a consultant that has provided some of that information that I think could be used to record those balances.
I think what that, in the end, I think that ends up as a favorable aspect to our year end, because we have either not or undervalued pretty much every developer contributed asset. I'm not sure we ever really understood, as long as I've been here, I'm not sure we really understood what that policy was going to be. It's, you know, like I said in the meeting, it's different, for example, in a place like Folsom, where you have a city council and everything is going to that one place. We've morphed from the 1970s into a position where we don't own the land. You know, we only own the infrastructure that's in the ground. So that valuation really doesn't show up completely in our books, or shouldn't show up completely in our books, because other than an easement, which is physical land, which we would own, you know, if it's granted to us, or if it's not even an easement, if it's an ownership, we can book that. But the rest of it, all of the surrounding property with the streets and everything that's above the ground, is really not our property. So I think now that we understand what that's supposed to be, I think we can
go forward with an accurate appraisal. It's easy to say, okay, you own this piece of land, everyone can see it, and there's deeds and that type of thing, but it's the infrastructure that's below that nobody can see, even though you may not have a deed per se to that ownership, at least as far as the accounting rules relate to who is responsible for maintaining that infrastructure. Well, the developers, they construct and they move on.
And they move, yeah.
So it's the district's responsibility for maintaining it, so that is by definition in the accounting rules anyway considered ownership.
And I just want to understand too, going forward, that there's two things going on here. There is the physical cost of the material that has gone into the ground, for example, but in a development similar to the one we're doing now called Riverview, the amount of work that was done to create that infrastructure is monumental, starting with the removal of hundreds and hundreds of trees and the trenching of miles and miles of property and all of the inherent work of inspection and everything else that goes into that. Is that what we book?
Yeah, but basically the value, and I think
is it accurate to call it replacement value at the time we?
It's not replacement value, it's cost at the date that it was constructed. So I think when we talked about the consultant that has prepared a report, if they're basing it on current dollars, when you record it in your books, you have to deflate it back to the year that the infrastructure was constructed. So if it was in 1970, you need to take $20, $25 and deflate them back to 1970 and whatever year. And because for the accounting records, it has to be historical cost.
But there's quite a bit of it out there now in current construction that we're going to take it virtually.
So that would be current
values.
Yeah.
Okay.
And since I've started here, the only ones that we have received the infrastructure, we just received infrastructure for like the pipes and the connections. I don't think that the streets or the pavement were in there, but then we don't maintain them, so they wouldn't be.
No, they wouldn't be.
But
just
like
the pipes.
Clearing the land, none of that value was in what we received from them in those resolutions.
Yeah, that's where I'm getting hung up on the nuance.
That's why I brought that back up.
You know, we don't receive it.
Right.
I mean, but it's there. If it's current value, it includes in my mind anyway, it includes the amount of money it took to get it into that condition.
Yeah,
understanding that if it was completely wiped out in a flood, it would cost us that non
tangible
pipe and pump stuff to put it back in its original condition. Plus, if we have the opportunity to take it as an asset, why wouldn't we take it as an asset and run our assets up? It doesn't make any sense not to. I mean, as long as it's legal.
No, it actually is required.
Yeah, okay.
If
the number that's
opinion.
Required is higher than the number we've been booking, I suggest we take the higher number.
I think, typically what's done is, like for the project that's going on now at Riverview, is that when the work is completed and the developers moved on, you would get an estimate from them or their engineers on what's the cost to construct that infrastructure, and that's the amount you would record as an asset and start depreciating it.
Okay.
That's, and that's what we got, the cost of the infrastructure, the cost of the, again, the pipes and the, what was in the ground. We're going to, not only that we own and we have to forever maintain.
Right.
We don't have to maintain the fact that they've taken trees out. We just have to maintain the sewer pipes.
No, but the fact that, you know, they put in 10 miles of trenching and, you know, and went uphill and everything else. What I just said was, in my mind anyway, we would want to understand what it cost them to develop it. Maybe not take the trees out, but the fact is, if it's wiped out, it's going to be wiped out by a flood or some other item. I would want that whole value booked as an asset, right?
I don't think you can book improvements to land as a capital asset.
Mm-hmm.
You can?
Yeah.
I mean, the grading to the road can be booked as an asset?
No, and we don't own the roads.
Okay.
Yeah, if you...
But the trenching that we put, the trench that we do...
Yeah, you can actually capitalize it as an asset because the work that goes into it becomes part of the roadway. And so any of the work that's placed on it can be capitalized because it's part of the soft cost that goes into the whole construction of it, and then you're maintaining it. So the land even that's graded out here to put a home on, because it's part of the essence of being part of drainage, because it's all sloped, you can capitalize it and it becomes an asset. It isn't something that we always physically own, like all of the land, but the work itself is something we book. And then we have engineers that review all of that work, and that work is part of the soft costs associated with it. And so that's what we're trying to get estimates on. Some of the acceptance letters, that's what I was looking at when you were kind of looking at me. Some of the acceptance letters, the recent ones, do have, I won't say it's an accurate, but it does have an accounting of all of the pipe and materials and the costs associated with what's turned over to us, and that's in some of the acceptance letters. An acceptance letter, just so everybody knows, is when... the district takes ownership from a development or a project. If there's something put in the ground at some point, we have to accept it. That acceptance is similar to like a deed, but it's basically like a change of ownership, and it becomes our responsibility for that infrastructure to maintain it.
Is that reflected in a current district policy of any kind? Like, yeah, it's a policy that you give it to us, and part two of it that's unwritten is we don't have any description of what it is you're supposed to give us.
Yeah, so I did dig up all the development related policy. I don't see a specific one on that. So once we clean this up, we have to develop one.
Right.
So that's procedure that's, going forward.
That's something we want to deal with down the road here. Okay. Thanks.
Okay. And then further down on page 48 is finding 2019-4. 2019 was audited by another auditor, but we continue to carry those items forward until they're resolved. And this was a comment about that the journal entries performed by the accounting staff need to be reviewed. So we're continuing to carry that forward. Finding 2019-7 on page 49. Fund accounting system, again, this has been in the audit reports at least since 2019. The issue there is that the district has a general ledger that doesn't do separate fund accounting. I mean, there's separate, I don't know if it's department codes or what, there's coding in the system to be able to divide the general ledger by funds, but they're not self-balancing within the district system, so
right.
That creates a lot of extra work in the audit and preparing for the audit to get those funds into balance. So the recommendation there is purchasing software to do the fund accounting. I don't know if your current system is able to do fund accounting, but I think you...
So the current system can be set up properly to account for the different fund and to do self-balancing, but those features were never turned on. So I plan to turn those things on to accomplish that goal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we understand this is how we got here.
Yeah.
And we quite recently discovered that it was here all the time, and we're using it.
Good.
Okay.
Then further down on page 49, finding 2019-9 has to do with bank reconciliations, both the timeliness of them, and at one point they were prepared outside of the accounting system because of not being able to get those to work. There is some improvement there in that the reconciliations were provided in the system, but there were some outstanding checks that were omitted, so there's still some area for improvement on the bank reconciliations. And then finding 2019-11 has to do with non-active customers that are still within the receivable system and whether or not those can be those are balances, I guess, or credit balance in some cases, and whether they need to be escheated to the state. Something to consider on those credit balances. The next report to go over is the required communications letter, which is a separate document. Do they have a copy of that?
I just made the copies that you need.
Okay, then, yeah, you could just, do you have the required communications letter? It should be after the CFD. So the governance letter just contains items we're required to report to you. It talks about what our responsibilities are in the audit. We did prepare the financial statements on behalf of the district, but they're ultimately responsible for the information that's in there and reviewing it before it's approved. I think it should be after after the CFD.
No, this last page.
Oh yeah, okay, you're there.
The last page of the CFD.
Okay.
Auditor's result, responsibilities.
Yeah, I think it's after this document that you're in.
Other information.
Yeah, should be after that.
And then I go into the CFD.
Yeah, it should be after that.
Okay, yeah. Keep going. Summary of significant notes.
Yeah, it should be after that.
It's going to be under heading.
It's going to say required communications letter. I don't know if you have that in. Did you have that letter
in your
packet? Required communications letter?
Yeah.
It may not be in there.
I don't think I got it.
Okay. So maybe just go back to the outline, the summary. So
if you want me to add that to the packet, I'm going to make a late addition.
Yes.
In the morning then.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. One of the things I could point out in the letter is it describes areas where adjustments were made to the accounting records. So there were 34 adjustments during the audit process. Again, that number is high. We try to recommend it being somewhere around 5 to 10. So just an indication of areas where improvements are needed to get all those closing entries identified during the closing process. And then the management letter, did that go out as well? The management letter that was...
Did you send it to me?
Yeah, I sent all three of those.
Is that page 4?
Letter?
Is that?
Oh, you know what? I think I know what happened.
It should be a 3-page document. So the management letter is where we communicate other findings that we don't consider to be material weaknesses.
You did send this to me. I didn't put them in the packet. I didn't realize that I needed to.
Okay.
So I will add those, and
and
they'll be updated on the internet.
Okay. So the management letter contains other items we're recommending for improvement. Again, many of these items are carrying over from previous audits. I can just run through those real quick if you'd like, if you haven't read those or had a chance to look at the draft. Area of capital assets, the district did start using their internal accounting system for the capital assets. We're just recommending that an inventory of capital assets be done and remove items that are no longer in service. I know several items were removed because they were no longer on hand, so just making sure that remain updated. Another recommendation is updating the reserve policy. The policy, I believe, in effect now goes back to 2012. So we're recommending that you review and update the reserve policy. We also had a recommendation on the procedure manual. The district does have procedure manuals, but they haven't been updated since 2010. It was mentioning specific names of people, none of which are currently here at the district, so we're recommending that procedure manual be updated. And then the next comment has to do with the billing system integration. So currently the billing system is separate from the general ledger. It doesn't interface. And so there's a series of spreadsheets that have to be prepared to get the information into the general ledger. So our recommendation there would be to try to get a system that integrates. I don't know if your current system that has a billing system that can integrate with the general ledger. That might be something to look at. I think just getting us, it's just labor intensive to go from, get the information from the billing system into the general ledger. Then accounts receivable aging report. The district wasn't able to produce an aging report out of the system, which shows the aging categories of the receivables. So we're just recommending they work with the software provider to get an aging out of the system, and that report be reviewed on a regular basis to keep up to date with any delinquencies. And then another comment has to do with general fund allocation. So currently, the way that the system is set up is that there, and I think the way you budget is that you have a general fund, and then you have, of course, all of your enterprise funds. So right now, there's an allocation that needs to be done that takes everything in the general fund and allocates it all to the other funds. So I think the district needs to determine whether you really need to have a general fund, or if you can just account for all the activity within your water or your sewer funds. It would simplify the accounting because, Cecilia can attest to, trying to go back and every entry you book to the general fund, you have to reallocate it to the other funds. So something to consider. And then the investment policy. So the government code requires that the investment policy be reviewed by the board annually. It doesn't necessarily need to be updated every year. But the last time the investment policy was updated or reviewed by the board, I believe it was in 2016. So we're recommending that policy be reviewed, possibly updated, and then going forward that it be brought to the board annually for review.
Okay.
And then developer deposits. So the accounting for the developer deposits has to flow through revenue and expense. And so currently that activity is being netted in a deposit liability account. So we're just recommending those amounts be reflected in revenue and expense. And we did do an adjustment as part of the audit to get those revenues and expenses recorded. And then customer accounts, our item there is there's apparently some customer, and again, this is going back several years. So at the time, there were some customer accounts that were on payment plans to pay past due bills. So we're just recommending that those accounts that are on payment plan be tracked and then that be reconciled to the general ledger. And then if there's potentially any unpaid balances that are not collectible, considering turning them over to the county to be included in the property tax rolls. And then we had a comment on risk assessment process, and this isn't necessarily a policy, but whether it be board, management staff, everyone needs to be involved in some type of discussion on whether or not you feel that there's any areas where there's risks of fraud. We usually recommend that maybe as part of the budget discussions, there be an item on the agenda, the board agenda, that just have a discussion item on whether the board members have any areas where they feel like that either they have questions on any potential risk areas, risks for fraud and for misstatement. And then the last item is on inventory. So currently, the district doesn't have any type of inventory for like meters, pipes, fittings, that type of thing. With water sewer districts, it's typical to have an inventory of items that are tracked on the balance sheet and in some type of inventory system. Right now, I think what's happening is that those items are just being expensed off. So I think this really just involved looking at, you know, how many of those items do you have on hand? Is it worth it to start inventorying those items and recording them as assets on your financial statements? Again, it's typical for water and sewer agencies to have some amount of items like that on hand for repairs.
Right.
So it's just unusual to us that we don't see that inventory recorded as an asset. So that is a summary of the other recommendations. So if you have any questions or other areas, I think we'll get those letters sent out to you. Okay.
I got a register.
Okay. So yeah.
Any questions out there? Okay.
Well, I have a. I don't have a question for the auditors. I'm just noticing on our agenda tomorrow, on item number 7 is a report on this. And since we're missing pages, what was it, 4 through 11, and some other documents, I'm wondering if we shouldn't postpone that until such time as we have all of that, because we're.
Have they decided not to do 4 through 11?
Yeah, 4 through 11 is...
That's the management discussion.
Yeah, so that...
We're not
going to
do that.
Yeah, we're just
going to
read
the page numbers.
We're not going to do that ever, or we're not going to do that?
In the 22.
We're going to do it, but we weren't going to do it from 2019 to 2020. We were going to do it as we complete the next two audits and get more close to the current audit.
I guess my point is that these folks have done a lot of work, and the public does deserve to hear it at our regular meeting, but we don't want to have them on the agenda tomorrow and say, oh, they'll be back next month with further updates. So if they show up tomorrow, then we're going to be done with this audit. Is that correct?
We are done with this audit. The remaining process is just me looking in fine print, checking all the number to my system, but there's no more adjustment. We're done.
And the two letters that I failed to put in this packet, I will have them printed up tomorrow so that the audience can catch up. It's like a total of 5 or 6 pages of reading. I'll email them to the board this evening, so I think that we would be prepared. Now the question is, do we want Ingrid and Heidi to join us again tomorrow, or can Cecilia review these, or John review these with the board?
I personally, you know, felt like your presence will be good for the audience. Tomorrow we will have a lot more audience, and since they've waited for so long for this audit, it will be, but we don't have to go into that
scale.
Yeah,
I wasn't planning to.
Yeah, so your presence last time, it was 10, 15 minutes when the prior auditor show up. So I think your presence is important.
Okay, so then tomorrow at 5 p.m. I have you the first thing on the agenda.
Okay.
So you'll be speaking about 5:05, 5:10.
Okay.
And I'll have the coffee for you.
She's tea. She's a tea girl.
I'll have some coffee.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Anything further for today? Do you have anything further?
No, it was great working with you both. You know, this is a very difficult audit, and I've done audit myself. I think this is very difficult because we have so much of this without the system, and it's bang rag, which is a basic thing. It's not there. So, thank you for your patience because this is difficult to do.
Yeah.
And next two, I felt like I have enough to make sure that we don't get into the situation of 34 journal entries. I lost count at the end. I'm afraid to come back and do any adjustment.
Oh, I asked him.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so I am going to work hard to make sure that we don't have 34 journal entries. It's very difficult to do.
I did want to point out, though, that Cecilia came in like maybe part of the way through when somebody else, I mean, a predecessor had already started some of the closing entries, and so Cecilia had to jump in on the last third or so, I would say, and had to do a lot of cleanup, but basically had to pick up where somebody else left off. So
And
I know that was difficult.
And part of what has started since she showed up on the front door is that we have been not only trying to work through the discrepancies in the system, but we've been trying to fix stuff as we go along. You know, we dealt with the asset issue with you know, developer turning over property. We've dealt with bank reconciliation. You know, we're hopefully, as we do the next two, some of that stuff, you know, it certainly will have to be dug up because it's not corrected in what we're working with. But we have made a lot of progress. I think there's a lot more to do, but we'll get there. We're gonna finish this.
In the next two audits, I'm actually doing it inside the system, so you will have automatic bank rec that would not be in Excel format. You know, the missing checks will not happen, hopefully. And so Fix Asset is now, Mark put it into Fix Asset module. Going forward, we'll continue to use that and beef it up and make sure that we are doing normal accounting in the system. Even the do-do-do from and the interfund balancing, we're doing it in the system instead of doing it outside the system, doing big allocation worksheets. We're not doing that. So hopefully it will be better. And you won't suffer for 34 journal entry. I know it's difficult for you too because you've done some of the work and then, ooh, another journal entry, you have to revise all your work paper. It's crazy. So I'm hoping that I can give you a set of book that is very minimum journal entries.
We have a fully functioning accounting system that's been here for, I don't know how many years, a lot,
yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember another one, and I've been here for a long time. And it's since May, it has been fully functional for the first time. So that may make a difference. We're going to see how it runs.
Yeah.
And like she said, the stuff that we were carrying over to build these monthly reports was strictly coming out of Excel, which won't last for long because you get the same system built on individual input that causes the errors that got us here with Great Plains when we weren't doing the allocation system properly. So at least now we can understand what it is the system we have will do. And then when we take that data and dump it into a new system such as Cassell, which is one that we've looked at, we won't be dumping in manually generated data. So here we are.
Okay, so to confirm, John, we're going to put this on as either item 5 or item 6
tomorrow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, you know, and you've done this obviously a lot of times, you can streamline that.
I'm not going to go into it. I'm probably not even going to refer to specific pages in the document. I mean, I can't. Is this outline in the board package for tomorrow?
Yeah.
Yes,
okay, so I'm not going to walk through every item on the outline. It'll be in the package. I'm just going to touch on really high level. I wasn't planning to walk through specific findings unless there's questions that anybody has.
And I'm sure tomorrow night, you know, there will be some. And I want to leave enough time for that. And with everything else that's on there, try to get out of here without a midnight snack. So. But yeah, that'll be fine. And yeah, like I said, don't omit anything. And there's a lot of stuff, particularly at the end, where you know these ongoing deficiencies that are not, you know, causes to turn the audit upside down are still things we want to recognize. Mm-hmm. And they should be out there. I think the public needs to see those. So that part of it. You know, the reserve policy, the procedure manual, the taking the GL and coordinate it with billing system and the AR aging and all that stuff. you know, put that out there. I think everybody needs to see what it is we need to do to get ourselves right. Okay. That it?
Mm-hmm. Director comments?
No.
Bill, anything? None for me, thanks.
Okay, then we are adjourned, and thank you very much.
Thank you.